Well, I guess we'll go ahead and get started. We're missing some people, but maybe they'll come, and maybe they're just having their last minute summertime hurrah. But we can get this party started. We are in Genesis class 23. We are in about halfway through Genesis 30. And we are in an ongoing year-long study of Genesis. And it's been pretty exciting. The current story that we're in is going to get very interesting tonight. And so we're going to have fun talking about that. I'm going to be reading from the New King James Version. There's, like I said, there's a bunch of versions. You can have whatever you like. I've studied the top 12 in depth, and they're not substantially different, although some of them do get a little bit more easy reading and lax in the translation. The NASB is probably the most direct translation from the original language. But the New King James is a very, very, very good translation, very authentic, and kind of carries over some of the historical elements from the King James, which is kind of fun. And so that's the one we tend to go with. But like I said, NIV is fine. NIV sits right in the middle of readability and accurate translation. So before we get started, as usual, let's pray. Heavenly Father, thank you so much for this night. Welcome you to this place. We need you to be here with us. We welcome you, and we ask you for your guidance, your wisdom. Open our hearts and our minds to your word, and show us what you would have us see. We love you, and we appreciate this time together as a community in this place that you've provided, and we're just so grateful for everything. We worship you for who you are, and we ask you to be with us in this study, and we pray in the mighty name of Jesus. Amen. So Jacob is dealing with Laban. Now, Laban has been a little shady, but, you know, Jacob can't really throw stones in a glass house, okay? Because he's not exactly completely unshady himself. So we've got a pretty realistic story that we're in the middle of, which is pretty exciting. But as you know from last time, we ended with the birth of Joseph. So Jacob has gone as instructed by his mother and father and traveled back to the place where their people are going to be from so that he can continue this line with the proper, proper wife. And he gets back there and he meets this girl named Rachel. He falls in love with her and he goes through this process of dealing with her dad. And he kind of gets the old switcheroo and ends up with her older sister, and then does another 7 years to get her. And so he's got 14 years of labor, you know, that he's been going through. And he's been paying his dues in order to have the right to marry both women. In the process, as we studied last time, Rachel was barren, and so the idea came along to send her maidservant in, and so she fathered some children, and then mothered some children to him, gave him some kids. And then, of course, when Leah's had trouble continuing to give birth, she did the same thing with her maidservant. So now, ostensibly, we've got about four wives for Jacob, and we've got about 11 kids so far. There's going to be a 12th, but right now the youngest one is Joseph, and Joseph has just been born. And we pick up in chapter 30 in verse 25, and Jacob is, he's been here for quite a while, and he's got all this family. According to the timeline being run by Andy, he's probably around 91 when Joseph is born. So he's probably close to the same age as Abraham was when Isaac was born. And so he's an old man, but these guys are having kids and living for a long time. So he's still doing all right, but, you know, he's wearing out. And he needs to get himself set up. Remember, he didn't really have a lot going on back home. He came here to set up his life. He's been gone now 14 plus years. So he doesn't have a whole lot. He's got, you know, to look forward to back there. He really has to get himself organized. So Jacob says to Laban, "Send me away that I may go to my own place in my own country, and give me my wives and children for my servants." You have something you were going to add? You look like you had something. Okay, so that was about 91. Is that about correct? Okay, good.
Yeah.
Okay.
Hey, how old was do you think Jacob was when he left after he got the birthright from Isaac when he went to Laban?
Yeah, he's not young. He's not, but he's not super old. You got a guess on that, Andy? At the very least, he's been traveling for a year or two, and he's been here for 14 plus years. At the very least, it's been 15 to 20 years. So, you know, he might have already been older, which is weird, because why would he go looking for a kid when he was 60, right? So the travel might have taken a lot longer, or he might have been waiting to have a kid till he was later.
Or waiting that long to get a wife.
Yeah. I mean, it's possible. He's been hanging out with his mom. And basically hasn't been acting like his brother at all. So maybe, of course, that whole the whole time frame of the travel could have taken a long time as well. But while we're waiting for that, Laban says to him, like I said, I haven't counted those years to be exact, and we don't have a real good record. So he might be significantly younger than that. But anyway, that was the best guess we had. Which also connected him back to Abraham. He's trying to get, he says, "Give me my wives and my children whom I have served you, and let me go. You know my service. You know what I've done for you." And Laban says to him, "Please stay." Now this is that part we were talking about the last couple classes when we were talking about how the blessing works and how there seems to be people, you know, sort of chosen by God. And how this works, because we're not in a time where there's Hebrews, we're not in a time where there's a church, we're not in a time where there's an organized religion of any kind. This is pre-Moses, this is pre, you know, writing all this stuff down, pre-law, pre-everything. And it seems that this blessing of God is resting with one person, starting with Abraham and then moving to Isaac and now moving to Jacob. So the way Laban talks about this is, "I have found favor because you were here." So in other words, the Lord has blessed me for your sake. So while Jacob is there taking care of Laban's stuff, everything prospers, right? Because Jacob has the blessing of God. So Laban doesn't want him to leave because he's got this understanding that, you know, this is coming from Jacob. And they still have, and we're going to find out more about this later, but they've still got other gods they're worshiping. They still got idols around the house. They've still got all these things that they're doing that aren't in direct accordance with God's wishes. You know, we don't have the Ten Commandments yet. We don't have any of that stuff yet. So they don't know how to go about this, especially people that aren't Jacob, right? People that don't have the direct connection to God like Isaac or Abraham or Jacob aren't dealing with God directly, so they really don't have a note how to do this. They've still got those, you know, household idols and stuff, which we'll see later. So anyway, he's got it figured out, at least the part of it that says, if Jacob's here, everything's going to go all right, and if he's not, it might not. So he says, "You got to stay, name your wages, and I will give it to you." So Jacob says, "You know how I've served you and how your livestock has been with me. For what you had when I came was little, and it increased to a great amount. The Lord has blessed you since my coming. And now, when shall I also provide for my own house?" He's saying, "I've been doing all this for you, and everything's yours. I've been raising all your animals, and they've all been prospering. And you've got these, you're a wealthy man now. You've got all this stuff. And, you know, when am I going to start setting up my stuff?" So he says, so Laban says, "What shall I give you?" And Jacob says, this is brilliant. And I love this story. And it's crazy. It's a weird story, but I love it. So here's how it goes. Jacob said, "You shall not give me anything. If you will do this thing for me, I will again feed and keep your flocks." Now this is going to sound a little complicated, but I'll explain what he's talking about here in a second. Let me pass through all your flocks today, removing from there all the speckled and spotted sheep. and all the brown ones among the lambs, and the spotted and speckled among the goats, and these shall be my wages. So my righteousness will answer for me in the time to come, when the subject of my wages comes before you. Every one that is not speckled and spotted among the goats and brown among the lambs will be considered stolen if it is with me. And Laban said, oh, that it were according to your word. Now, he's super excited. What that phrase means is that he's like, oh my gosh, is this really, am I really going to get this good a deal? What Jacob is suggesting is that there's these off-colored animals, right? There's a big flock, and some of them are speckled or striped or have little spots or whatever. And the majority of them are one color, or they match, or they look really healthy and really, really solid, right? And there's the weird ones. So he's saying, I'll take the weird ones. And the weird ones don't come very often. So Laban is thinking, well, if he does this, I'm going to get away with murder, man. I'm going to get away with like having him keep working for me, and I'm going to get all the good stuff. So he went and removed the male goats that were speckled and spotted, all the female goats speckled and spotted, the one that had some white in it, the brown ones with the lambs, and gave them to the hands of his son and put 3 days' journey between himself and Jacob, and Jacob fed the rest of Laban's flocks. Now, what's this about? Well, this is Laban removing the speckled and spotted ones to make the herd pure. And now Jacob's going to take care of it. What Jacob gets is that, because that's going to be Laban still. This is his herd. So he's going to pull out from his herd the part which is all the speckled and spotted ones and leave all the straight colored ones for Jacob to take care of. What that means is that Jacob's going to only get the ones that are born now from the normal looking ones without having the speckled and spotted ones in the mix. You understand? That's extremely rare. So that's why Laban's so happy. It's like Jacob's just going to keep having more white ones and black ones and everything's going to be awesome and I'm going to get rich. He's not going to get anything. And in a period of time from now, a couple years probably, but in a period of time from now, what's going to happen is they're going to come back and check in. And it's going to be time for Jacob to leave. He's going to take all the speckled and spotted ones that have been born during that period of time and raised up. And he's going to be able to leave with those. That's going to be his wages. And Laban is laughing, okay? Because he's going to have 10 or 20 of these shady goats. And he's going to have these thousands of great goats. And it's going to be an amazing day for Laban, right? But Laban doesn't know something that Jacob knows. And that is God, right? He doesn't really get that things don't go like that. When God's in the mix, he can fix these things. So they take all that stuff away, and off Jacob goes with these other ones. Now, this is funny. I've read a bunch of commentaries trying to explain these peeled striped trees. I got a few theories to throw at you, but basically, this is what it says. Now, Jacob took for himself rods of green poplar and of almond and chestnut trees, peeled white strips of them, exposed the white which was in the rods. Then the rods he had peeled, he set before the flocks in the gutters, in the watering troughs where the flocks came to drink, so that they should conceive when they came to drink. So the flocks conceived before the rods, and the flocks brought forth streaked, speckled, and spotted. So the theory here is that, and this is just funny, but the majority theory is that because he makes the trees speckled and spotted and striped, when the animals are looking at them, when they're conceiving, they're going to have more speckled, spotted, and striped animals, which is hilarious, okay? I tend to think that there's probably a more practical reason. For instance, if he sets up stakes along in front of you where you're watering, and the animals are trying to breed, and the male tries to get on the female, and she tries to run away, she can't. So you would end up having more conceptions because of the sticks. But there also might be some, you know, weird smell or something that would scare them or do something to them that's in the stripped things. It's just a weird story. And I'm sure that if we stripped down those things and looked at them, we might find something out. But sure enough, that's what's happening. And he's separating the lambs, and he makes the flocks. He makes the flocks, the normal flocks that look normal, face the speckled and striped and spotted ones in their pens, ostensibly so that they'll like get the picture and have more speckled and spotted animals. And it's just Jacob being funny, pretty much, as far as I can tell. And I read commentaries all the way back to 1600s, and they're like, it's a weird story, but it's cool. So he's separating his flocks. Now, first of all, they're having an unusual number of speckled and spotted ones. And now he has access to speckled and spotted ones. So he's going to start doing good husbandry, right? He's a good stock manager. So he's going to take the stronger livestock and he's going to start separating out the livestock. So it came to pass, whenever the stronger livestock conceived, that Jacob placed the rods before the eyes of the livestock in the gutters, they might conceive among the rods. But when the flocks were feeble, he did not put them in. So the feebler were Laban's and the stronger Jacob's. Thus the man became exceedingly prosperous, had large flocks, female and male servants, and camels and donkeys. So what this is saying is, he's putting those rods down whenever the stronger animals are going to breed, and he's getting more of this spotted, striped, off-colored animals that are stronger. And so what's happening is he's doing what a breeding program, basically. He's breeding the stronger ones at certain times, and he's also putting these gates or whatever you want to call it up at certain times. And what's happening is he's using wise husbandry techniques to prosper himself even more. So this is an example of what happens when God has a plan and your plan and God's plan come together and you keep working. So God's got you, but you're going to work anyway. So now you're taking what the gifts that God gave you and you're applying them to the mission that you're on, which is God-given mission, and all these things click. And you get both things happening simultaneously. So now, when they come back to check later, he's going to have a big old herd of really awesome speckled and spotted lambs and goats. So, Genesis 31. Now Jacob heard the words of Laban's sons, saying, Jacob has taken away all that was our father's, and from what was our father's he's acquired all this wealth. And Jacob saw the countenance of Laban, and indeed it was not favorable toward him as before. So he's noticing a change in the politics, right? Laban is no longer happy, because he was happy for him to take care of his stuff and make a whole bunch of new lambs and goats and everything for him and have him be all wealthy. But since the majority of the good stuff is turning out to be Jacob's, he's not so happy about that plan anymore. And we've learned a lot about Laban from before, from what he did in the first place with Jacob, with the two daughters. I mean, this is and how he's trying to get him to stay, and he's going to work for him for 14 years. I mean, this is a selfish guy, and he's not very happy that this is not turning out like he wants it to. Then the Lord said to Jacob. So now we just switch gears. We've been dealing with animal husbandry. Now the Lord said to Jacob, return to the land of your fathers and your family, and I will be with you. So Jacob's got to make a move. The Lord has now given him the word to move. Okay, he's been doing all whatever he needed to do and getting his stuff together. He's got it together. It's time to make a move. And God says, time to move. So 31:4. So Jacob sent and called Rachel and Leah to the field to his flock. And he said to them, I see your father's countenance, and is not favorable toward me as before, but the God of my father has been with me. And you know that with all my might I have served your father. Yet your father has deceived me and changed my wages 10 times, but God did not allow him to hurt me. If he said thus, the speckled shall be your wages, then all the flocks bore speckled. And if he said thus, the streaked shall be your wages, then all the flocks bore streaked. So God has taken away the livestock of your father and given them to me. So he's explaining to his wives what's happened. Your dad was trying to play games again, but God took care of it. And whatever he said was mine, God made it all mine. And it happened at the time that the flocks conceived that I lifted up my eyes and saw in a dream, and behold, the rams which leaped upon the flocks were streaked, speckled, and gray spotted. Then the angel of God spoke to me in a dream, saying, Jacob. And I said, Here I am. And he said, Lift your eyes now and see. All the rams which leap on the flocks are streaked, speckled, and gray-spotted. For I have seen all that Laban is doing to you. I am the God of Bethel, where you had anointed the pillar, and where you made a vow to me. Now arise, get out of this land, and return to the land of your family. Then Rachel and Leah answered and said to him, Is there still any portion or inheritance for us in our father's house? Are we not considered strangers by him? For he has sold us and also completely consumed our money. For all these riches which God has taken from our father are really ours and our children's. Now then, whatever God has said to you, do it. So, these girls, for whatever their reasons might be, okay, are on the same page. Maybe they're doing it because he's their husband and they're being loyal. Maybe they're doing it because they see the truth of what he's explaining. They know their father, you know, is kind of shifty. Maybe they, it's as simple as what they say. They're supposed to have all this wealth being built up by all this, and he's squandering it and everything else. And so they don't have anything there. They need it. And at the very least, they've seen the actions of God with the kids and with Jacob for at least 14 to 20 years. So they get it. They get that God, just like their dad does, they get that God is with Jacob. And so if they know that, they're very wise to stick with it. Plus, he's got all those kids and all those crops and, I mean, all those animals and everything else. It would be very unwise to leave Jacob anyway. So it all makes sense for multiple reasons, but they're on the same page. So then Jacob rose and set his sons and his wives on camels, and he carried away all his livestock and all his possessions which he had gained, and his acquired livestock which he had gained in Paddan Aram, to go to his father Isaac in the land of Canaan. Now Laban had gone to shear his sheep, and Rachel had stolen the household idols that were her father's. And Jacob stole away, unknown to Laban the Syrian, in that he did not tell him that he intended to flee. So he fled with all that he had. He arose and crossed the river and headed toward the mountains of Gilead. So two things are happening simultaneously. Okay, Jacob's taking all the stuff and leaving. He doesn't want any trouble with Laban or his sons. He thinks there could be trouble. He's heard them talking about how he's done wrong to their dad or whatever. So he's going to sneak away. He's going to take all of his stuff and just leave. He's got rights to all the stuff that he has. He's not doing anything wrong. He's going to take everything and leave. He's just not going to bother to say goodbye because it could be drama, right? At the same time, Rachel steals the household. I don't know what she's thinking, okay? I don't know if she's thinking we got to take these gods with us because they're going to protect us, or if they're made of gold or they're worth stuff, and she's like mad because they didn't get their stuff from their dad, so she's going to take it out on his idols. I don't know what she's thinking. But Rachel turned out to be the problematic one in this story. But she steals the stuff. So now it's gonna look to Laban like they stole his stuff and ran, right? That's not what happened, but that's gonna be what it looks like. So Laban's gonna pursue Jacob. So Laban was told on the third day that Jacob had fled. Then he took his brethren with him and pursued him for 7 days' journey and overtook him in the mountains of Gilead. But God had come to Laban the Syrian in a dream by night and said to him, Be careful that you speak to Jacob neither good nor bad. Now let's just pump the brakes for a second. First of all, how does he overtake him when he's got a 3-day head start? And the way he overtakes him is Jacob's traveling with all the women, all the children, and all the flocks. He's traveling with a bunch of stuff. It's a massive movement. Laban's traveling with a bunch of guys, like soldiers basically. So they're much faster. That's how they overtake them. Second of all, this is an interesting instruction from God. Be careful you do not speak to Jacob neither good nor bad. Now that's an interesting instruction. It's not do whatever Jacob says or leave Jacob alone or whatever. And I think, bless you, I think that God wants Laban and Jacob to deal with each other, but he doesn't want Laban to do anything extreme because that might cause some type of reaction or some type of trouble. I don't know God's mind in that, but that's what he says. So Laban overtook Jacob. Now Jacob had pitched his tent in the mountains, and Laban with his brethren pitched in the mountains of Gilead. And Laban said to Jacob, "What have you done that you have stolen away unknown to me and carried away my daughters like captives taken with the sword? Why did you flee away secretly and steal away from me and not tell me? For I might have sent you away with joy and songs, with timbrel and harp. And you did not allow me to kiss my sons and my daughters. Now you have done foolishly in so doing. It is in my power to do you harm. But the God of your father spoke to me last night, saying, 'Be careful that you speak to Jacob neither good nor bad.' And now you have surely gone because you greatly long for your father's house. But why did you steal my gods?" Okay. I think that Laban did what God said, basically, because I don't think that was too intensely good or bad. I think he was kind of in the middle. "I wanted to give you some love when you left. Why didn't you let me give you some love? Why'd you take my stuff? I could have kissed my daughters goodbye." Pretty neutral in his approach, but why did you steal my gods? And I'm fascinated by this anthropologically, culturally speaking. Because everybody's aware that Jacob has this God that he talks to, and this God is a powerful, universal creator God, and this God is blessing him right and left. And they want to use that blessing, and yet they continue to have these idols, these household idols, and he says, "Steal my gods," which is just fascinating, because it means that the gods are the idols, right? So the idols are representative of something, but they're much more representative than a symbol of a big deity. Like we might have a cross or something that's a symbol of God, but it isn't God. It's just a symbol of God. But this is like, the power is in the idols, right? Archaeologically, when they dig these sites from this time frame, they do find these idols in these houses. So there'll be these temples, and in this time frame, there'll be temples, and the temples will have large collections of idols and things like that, and altars and stuff in them. But then there'll be these smaller versions in people's homes. So this story here that we're reading has been also confirmed archaeologically. Okay, many homes have been found with these gods in them. And so it's fascinating to me, because if Laban believes in these gods for real, like he was raised with them, that idol right there is going to give me prosperity or whatever, then this would be a huge offense, stealing your gods. But he's also expressed that he believes that Jacob's God is the one blessing things. And then where is Rachel in all this? Because she steals the gods. Here's a possibility. She's been with Jacob long enough that she fully understands the power of the true God, and therefore she sees these idols as completely meaningless as idols, but they're just chunks of like gold or silver. So they're worth money. So she takes them because of their value without the godlike importance of them. Or Rachel is still under the belief system of her father and still believes these gods are necessary to have success and prosperity and fertility or whatever. And so she's going to bring the gods with their family. Either way, it's kind of messed up. But that's the idea behind this. He's offended. Jacob has no idea. Jacob would never take those idols. He don't want anything to do with those idols. Now, we don't have Mosaic law yet. We don't have take no idols. We don't have any of that stuff yet. But Jacob knows enough to know that that's ridiculous. That those idols are not the idols, they're not God, etc. So Honestly, this is an interesting story. We have questions about Rachel's, primarily we have questions about Rachel's motivation. So Jacob answered and said to Laban, "Because I was afraid, for I said, perhaps you would take your daughters from me by force. With whomever you find your gods, do not let him live. In the presence of our brethren, identify what I have of yours and take it with you." For Jacob did not know Rachel's home. So Jacob's like, "Man, I didn't take anything. Look around here, search everything, do whatever you want to do, take whatever you think is yours. I want to be done with you. I want to be done with this." And he said, I left and didn't say goodbye because I was worried. Because, you know, Laban has to realize that he's jerked Jacob around several times, right? So it's logical for Jacob to think, if I go to him and tell him we're going to leave, he's going to try to pull a fast one and keep extra stuff or do whatever. So that makes sense. So Jacob did not know about Rachel. So Laban went to Jacob's tent. Now, he's going to go search, right? He went to Jacob's tent to search for the idols. Then he goes to Leah's tent. And then into the two maids' tents. He did not find them. Then he went out of Leah's tent, entered Rachel's tent. Now, Rachel had taken the household idols, put them in the camel's saddle, and sat on them. And Laban searched all about the tent, did not find them. So she's sitting outside the tent on the camel on top of the idols. He's searching everywhere. She's sitting on them. He's searching everywhere. Does not find them. And she said to her father, "Let it not displease my lord that I cannot rise before you, for the manner of women is with me." And he searched, did not find them. So what is she saying? She's saying, I'm having a little problem, a little woman problem. I can't really get up and, just let me rest here. And he's like, "Oh, I don't want nothing to do with all that. Do your thing." And so she's hiding these idols. Okay. So Jacob now is mad because he searched everywhere, didn't find these things he accused him of stealing. And Jacob did not steal them. He doesn't know that they have them. So he's, he's honestly, and righteously angry about this. So he rebukes Laban and he says, "What is my trespass? What is my sin that you've so hotly pursued me? Although you've searched all my things, what part of your household things have you found? Set it here before my brethren and your brethren, they may judge between us both. These 20 years I've been with you, your ewes and your female goats have not miscarried their young. I've not eaten of the rams of your flock. That was what was torn by beasts I did not bring to you. I bore the loss of it. You required it from my hand, whether stolen by day or stolen by night. There I was in the day, the drought consumed me, and the frost by night, and my sleep departed from my eyes. Thus I have been in your house 20 years. I served you 14 years for your 2 daughters and 6 years for your flock, and you have changed my wages 10 times. Unless the God of my father, the God of Abraham, and the fear of Isaac had been with me, surely now you would have sent me away empty-handed. God has seen my affliction and the labor of my hands and rebuked you last night." So he just finally explodes. He finally just lets him have it. This is 20 straight years of your crap. You've been abusing me for 20 straight years. First of all, you did this thing with the daughter switcheroo. It took me 14 years to sort that out. Then I wanted to do this thing with the lambs and I tried to get my life together. It took me 6 years to sort that out. 20 years you've been, and if I would have come to you and I would have said I'm about to go, you would have figured out another way to take more stuff. So I'm tired of this. So Laban answered and said to Jacob, because he's got to be, if I was Laban right now, knowing what I know about Jacob and knowing what I've seen for 20 years, I would be very afraid. Because, he might have some soldiers with him, but Jacob can, has got God with him. So Laban answers and says to Jacob, "These daughters are my daughters, these children are my children, this flock is my flock, all that you see is mine. But what can I do this day to these my daughters or to their children whom they have borne? Now therefore come, let us make a covenant, you and I, and let it be a witness between you and me." So he's still trying to pull rank. So Jacob took a stone and set it up as a pillar. Then Jacob said to his brethren, "Gather stones." And they took stones and made a heap, and they ate there on the heap. Laban called it Yegar Sadwatha, but Jacob called it Galeed. And Laban said, "This heap is a witness between you and me this day." Therefore, its name was called Galeed, also Mizpah, because he said, "May the Lord watch between you and me when we are absent one from another. If you afflict my daughters, or if you take otherwise beside my daughters, although no man is with us, see, God is witness between you and me." So they're making a covenant, but this covenant that they're making is not exactly organized like the regular covenants from God are organized. So then Laban said to Jacob, "Here is this heap and here is this pillar which I have placed between you and me. This heap is a witness, this pillar is a witness, that I will not pass beyond this heap to you, and you will not pass beyond this heap to this pillar for me for harm. The God of Abraham, the God of Nahor, the God of their father, judge between us." And Jacob swore by the fear of his father Isaac. Then Jacob offered a sacrifice on the mountain and called his brethren to eat the bread. And they ate bread and stayed all night on the mountain. And early in the morning, Laban rose and kissed his sons and daughters and blessed them. Then Laban departed and returned to his place. So we've got this all sorted out. Well, obviously, Rachel's still holding on to idols. So, you know, but we've got the deal between Laban and Jacob sorted out. Jacob's got what he's supposed to have. He's got what is rightly his, even though Laban gets one last little stab in. "This is all mine, but okay, you can take some of it," or whatever. He's still trying to play games, but they make a pact. They make this covenant, and the covenant doesn't fulfill the rules and the laws of a serious God-given covenant. But it is a covenant, and it has to do with slaughtering, you know, an animal and eating together and making this, swearing this oath to each other. And they're not going to go past this pillar. In other words, this pillar sits here. He's going to be over here. He's going to be over here. And they're not going to go past this pillar to cause any harm to each other. Only good. Okay? So they're setting up a border, for starters, you know. But also, they're making a deal that this is a done deal. You're going to pass on here. I'm never going to come past this area to look for you for any harm, and vice versa. We're going to be fine. And it's a peace treaty. It's a neutrality treaty. And it's, you know, if he basically says, God will witness. If you do anything wrong to my daughters, God will be a witness. Because he won't be there. They're going to be separated. So he departs and returns to his place. And Jacob's going to move on. And that's how the Laban story comes to an end. We've got this entire thing that we've been unfolding for, you know, all this time. And it's taken Jacob 20 years of his life to sort this out. And that's been a while. It's been a long, long time. So what's been going on back there? Well, back there, Esau was in charge, right? I mean, Esau had the flocks. I mean, Isaac's still there. So Isaac had all of his riches and wealth and all of his flocks and people and everything. And then he had Esau. Remember, Esau had a blessing. It wasn't the right blessing or the exact blessing or the blessing of the future, but he had a blessing, and he was going to be blessed. Remember how that blessing read? He was going to have, you know, gifts from God. He was going to be blessed. And so Esau's being blessed, and Isaac's being blessed, and they're living back in Canaan, and everything's going great, except that, of course, Esau has married these Hittite women and multiple Hittite women, and is creating his own sort of subculture. But they've been all doing what they're doing over there, and Jacob's been gone for 20 plus years. He's been over here. So the question that we get to next is, what happens when Jacob and Esau see each other again, right? Because the original reason for Jacob leaving was that there was a fear that Esau was going to kill him. And remember the last time we saw Esau, we read that he made himself feel better and glad in his heart thinking about killing his brother. So he was pretty, you know, bent on Jacob's destruction and pretty psychotic last time we saw Esau. But that was 20 years ago, and that was fresh, you know, having been freshly, you know, losing his birthright or whatever. But Jacob's headed home, and he's going to see Isaac, and he's going to see Esau, and he's leaving the Laban situation far behind, and everything's going to be great. What could possibly go wrong?